as artists, we have to wear a lot of hats. We've spoken about this before. You've got to know yourself. You've got to understand your process. You've got to learn about all of this. How do you get out there stuff? And do it all in a way that feels right. Hello and welcome to Art Juice. This is honest, generous and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
And this is episode 121. And we thought we'd have a little, well, we'll wait and see. Let's get into the main topic when we get into it. A little teaser for you there. But first of all, as always, tell us a little bit about what you have been working on. Real Life Artist Week, how's it been for you?
Real Life Artist Week has been recording videos, which doesn't sound very artisty, does it? But I have a free course coming up, which starts on June the 3rd. And I had recorded videos for it last year and decided I wouldn't re-record them all this year because what's the point? And then I looked at them and thought, I can do better than that. And this is what I do every year. So I've re-recorded everything and re-edited everything. And now I'm getting the pages ready because each lesson has a web page and all boring things that you don't think about when you start painting. But the other thing that's been happening while I'm working on that is I'm noticing, you know, that feeling of like, right, I need to paint now. Mm-hmm. I need to get going again. And I don't quite, I'm still working through ideas, number one. And number two, I have loads of panels that need prepping and gessoing before I can start. And I hate that job. So I postpone that every day, which means I can't get started. And also, I don't have a lot of time for a few weeks. So what I decided to do is I have one big canvas that I'd already started painting on for a photo shoot. That sounds very professional, doesn't it? When I had the photographer in to do photos for my new website and for the book, she had me paint. And so I used this canvas and just messed around on it. So what I decided was, okay, every day or every other day, I can spend half an hour just letting some steam out on this canvas. And that just basically means slopping paint around in a completely unplanned way. But it just like a, it's like a release valve.
Yeah.
It's letting it out.
Yeah.
And so I can then concentrate on doing what I have to do. So it's a complete mess, but in a really fun and exciting way because I know I don't care what it looks like.
And also quite interesting that it's not, as you say, part of a considered series or anything else. It's just, it is what it is. You could just, it'll be quite exciting to see if it really leads you somewhere new, doesn't, won't it?
Yeah, it will be, because usually I don't like working on stretched canvas and this is stretched canvas. So it's requiring me to do different things. So yeah, we'll see. So what about you?
Well, a little bit the same, really. At home, the kitchen upheaval has finished. Everything is back. So that has been worth it. That has been worth it. But it has stretched on a number of weeks. So finally, the kitchen bits are off the table and back in the cupboards and functioning again. But it's funny that doing that as a decision, it's been at the back of my mind for about 2 years. Oh, it would be a good idea to do that. Oh, we really should do that. Oh, it would be great. And now it's finally happened. It's like, why didn't I do this earlier? It looks so much nicer. So that's on the personal front. But I've been feeling very much like you. I've been busy doing quite a lot of things, like we've spoken about last week, getting the paintings ready and shipping and, you know, all sorts of other membership is always ongoing. And this week I just thought, I don't care how busy I am. So I've been in the studio 2 days and it's really fun, damn it. You know, I mean, what's interesting is I've tried a slightly new approach to colour mixing, which I'm happy to talk about another time once I've got into it a little bit more. But it's very interesting how that's sort of led to a mood change. There feels a lightness to these, which I'm really quite enjoying. So, and I'm doing my best to record them. And I've got a little tip right at the end. I have found the magic solution to what has been a big problem. But I'll tell you about that at the end.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
So So for this week's main topic, we're going to take a slightly different tack for the next couple of weeks. We've realized that we've built up quite a large audience now. Thank you very much, everybody. And that lots of people who've joined us won't necessarily know all of our stories and how we got to where we are and why we're doing the things we're doing. We often refer to courses or membership sites and the work we're making, but we don't put it in any kind of context. So we thought for the next couple of weeks, we will interview each other. And hopefully that will bring out interesting stories from both of us about how we got to where we are and then why we do, where are we? And why are we there? Why are we doing what we're doing? And what is it that we're doing? So I thought it'd be fun to start by, I've known Alice now for a few years, and we're not like bosom buddies, but I feel like I know some things about her now that I didn't know when I first met her. And so I thought it would be interesting to share with Alice what I think people's perceptions of her are. And this is just my opinion. So, you know, everyone's going to have a different perception. But I think some of it will be accurate. And then we can find out if it's like, what's the reality behind what that perception is. So my, I think that how
people... did I let myself in for that part? I'm not sure.
You didn't volunteer for this. So okay. If you really hate what I say, we can always edit it out and no one will ever hear this part.
That's not the point. The point is warts and all, go for it.
No, because I think it's very complimentary. Okay. I think that how people see you, if people listen to this podcast or following any of your videos or anything you've done, I think people see you as extremely together, extremely successful, calm, very on the level, like very, I can't even think, I'm trying to think of words, I should have written words down first, but together is the best thing I can think of. Accomplished, capable, that in any situation, Alice would know what to do and Alice would take control and she would just organize things and you would feel safe if Alice was there because she would be calm, controlled, present, and just know what to do. So it always feels to me like I'm buzzing around, just being a bit erratic, and you're very organized and everything's under control and also extremely successful. So I think people perceive you as someone who's used those skills to build a very successful art career and a successful business for those who know about the business side, which we'll get into. So what I want to ask you is, as that's the perception, and that is the perception I had of you 4 years ago when I first came across you, not now, I still have that now, but 4 years ago I saw that, and 4 years ago you were not as far along as you are now, but my perception of you was, wow, that woman's really got it going on, she knows what she's doing.
Okay, and in those 4 years you have very, very definitely seen some chinks in that, some of which have been very public. Glassgate, you know, quite often the ups and the downs, that's what I think is important to share. But you've also seen some chinks behind the scenes that make you realize that a lot of that stuff is not true. I mean, I wouldn't say that any of it is a fabrication. And the thing about maybe wanting to take control over things or be in control or feel like I'm more in control, I think that's true. That's very definitely part of my personality, because without that, I do feel chaotic. And when I feel chaotic, not always, but often I feel frustrated and like I'm not making progress and everything is more exhausting and it takes more mental effort. And that's not a situation that I find helpful for actually getting done what I want to get done. So I would say that that part of me has come about as a result of knowing that in reality, I'm actually quite chaotic you know, quite disorganized. I mean, when you said that, I'm just looking to the left-hand side of me. I've got a pile of books that I was showing a while ago. I've got my breakfast plate. I've got my shipping label that should be in a file somewhere else, which I'm yet to create for shipping labels. I've got a stack of paintings and, you know, all of this stuff exists too. So it's just interesting, isn't it, that people have these perceptions, but we're all struggling with the same thing.
Yeah. And that's what, so I want to go back a little bit for people who don't know. You haven't been painting full time for ever since leaving art school, for example. No. Tell us kind of 5-minute potted history of Alice Sheridan from the moment you were born, from early on until becoming full time as an artist. What was that
journey? Okay, some speed speak possibly coming up here. So I have always loved art. I think that's true to many artists. I see it on a lot of artists' about page. I've always loved art. When I was 3, I ran away to nursery school because it was painting day before breakfast and my parents lost me. When I got to A-levels, which is the top of school, I really just wanted to spend all my time in the art room. And I dropped a subject in order to spend more time there, which works great until my dad said, yeah, but you are still going to do that subject as an exam, aren't you? And I was like, I had to teach myself very quickly. So I knew that it was something that I really wanted to do, but I didn't have any examples. Like, there was nobody I knew who was an artist. It wasn't a viable option, a career option at all. So the closest thing was to do graphic design, which I loved. Don't get me wrong, I really loved it. So I did that as a degree. And then I worked in London design studios. And what I found was really interesting was that lots of the, I don't want to make rules, but lots of the boys from that course went off and they wanted to go and work in really big companies where they were very specific, if you like, they were very niched. I never really wanted to do that. I loved the feeling of putting the whole thing together. So I ended up working for smaller companies, so maybe 6 to 10 employees. Then after a while, I switched to working freelance, which I really loved, where you were really involved in all elements of the project, the design, the conception, talking to the client, briefing the photographers, all of that part of it. And that totality of it, I really enjoyed it because I like having the variety. But it began to get too web-based, ironic. And one of the things that I loved about design was creating something physically, this sense of bringing something into the world that is a beautiful thing that you can hold in your hands, and that was getting lost. And that coincided with my first child, my son being born prematurely, and it didn't make financial sense to go back to work. And I couldn't imagine leaving him behind because he was too small to leave with anybody else, even when he was quite a bit bigger. So I didn't go back. And it was lovely being at home, but it also drove me a little bit crazy. I think I lost a bit of me along the way, and we didn't recognize it then. And then we moved and we had a big house project to do, turning this house that we live in now was flats. And then I had my daughter, who was born even more prematurely. And after that, I had a patch of depression, and that was a turnaround point, big time. And as I think often these big life moments can be. Yeah. You know, that took a lot of this. I don't think you recognize it at the time. It wasn't angst. It was, I suppose it was this thing of, is this it? You know, is this all? I don't want to go back to work in the same way that I was, but is this it? Is it only going to be picking up tea off the floor and all of that kind of stuff? You know, what is the next version of me going to look like? And so I started painting again.
Wow. It's so interesting that the negative, the depression, is often the thing that sparks the positive. Yeah. If it hadn't been for that, maybe you would have drifted back into graphic design or gone back to freelance work or something, if it hadn't been for that. And that's one of the things, when I learned that you'd been depressed, I was so surprised, because that so went against my idea of you.
Went against my idea of me as well. That was the shocking thing about it. Yeah.
And even I remember being at your house for an event once, and you were talking, and it was an emotional event. Everyone was sharing things. And as you were talking, you started almost crying, which I now know is very common for you. It's like, you know, just like me, you'll get very emotional and feel it, and you'll well up. But I remember being like, oh, Alice nearly cried. That's really surprising. It was a complete shock to me that you had. But why would it be when you make such emotional artwork? It's crazy that I had this idea that you were so in control all the time. But so you've decided to start painting.
Yeah.
And what I find fascinating about your journey is that you went from, I'm going to decide to start painting. You've never run a business. You've never had that experience of that side of things, but you decided, I'm going to start painting and I'm going to make it a business. I'm going to be successful at it. Lots of people think, I'm going to start painting and then I'll see what happens. But I think you were quite considered about it. Is that true?
Well, I mean, the background to this a little bit is my husband is a bit older than me. He's 13 years older. So we'd always had the kind of family narrative had always been, we'd made the discussion together for me to stay at home with the children. And then when he got older, he would retire and I would go back to work and take over. And I was like, la, 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 la. Hell knows what that's going to have, you know, what that's going to be. And it was really, so I spent a good few years just doing evening classes, doing a little bit of work just for my own. So I had, you know, two mornings a week where I could get the paints out at home and do something. And it was very small scale. It was really small scale. But my intention was it would feel really nice to be able to contribute something back to the family. So my initial aim was I would love to make enough that pays for the family's summer holiday this year. Like, that was my big goal. And I've spoken before, I work quite well with goals in the sense that sometimes they give me the motivation to do the things that you might not otherwise do. So, for example, one of those was applying for our open studios, which it took me 2 years to will up the nerve for. And then, of course, when you do it and you get accepted, now you've got to learn all of the things that it takes to pull your work together and find a framer and how do I present this? And people are going to, but how on earth do people buy it? I mean, in those days, people wrote checks. So that was easy. But things changed. So I think, yes, I sort of maybe had that intention a long way down the line. But I think, well, I know for sure, if you told me back then that I'm doing what I'm doing now, A, I wouldn't have believed you, and B, I would have been so terrified that I wouldn't have done anything. So it was a slow bit by bit, what's right for me now at this time that feels good to help me moving forward. That's been the approach that I think I've taken. And of course, it's easier to see that looking back a bit.
Yeah, because by the time I knew you, right at the beginning of 2018 that I first heard of you, I think, or the very end of 2017. And you were beginning to have more of a business head by then, I would say, or more of a businessy approach. But I still find that fascinating. So how did you get into, from no business background, right, I want to say pay for the family holiday, or next year I want to do something bigger than that. How did you work out what to do next to make that happen? Because that's the leap that artists often get stuck on. Yes, I know I want to sell my work, but where do I even start?
I think it's just little realizations along the way. So like I say, open studios was the first thing for me. And then I spent a bulk of time doing printmaking, which I loved, but it was slow. I mean, I was limited. I had limited access to the equipment. And I thought, right, you've got to make a decision here. Like, what do you want this to look like in 5 years' time or in 10 years' time? And, you know, if I was saying, I almost felt like, for me, the choice was, you've got to do as much as you can to see if this works, or in 5 years' time, you're going to have to be going and asking somebody else for a job. And I might not have been that explicit with myself about it, But that's probably what was at the back of my mind. It's like, and I didn't want to, I think there was a lot of discussion about being very careful about turning what you love into a job. Thankfully, I still love it. But there's a lot of fear around that. But that was also a driver. So also very consciously guiding me all the time has been, does this feel like what you want to do? Are you, and my, I remember my husband in the really early days of setting up my first website saying, you know, you're spending so long on this. And I was like, yeah, but I really want to do it. Like when there's something that you really want to do and it gives you a real purpose for doing it, then you're happy doing it because you know that what it's leading to in the bigger picture is something that you're prepared to put the time and the effort and the love into. So it was little bit by little bit, but the first open studios were great. They went really well. And I realized that one event a year wasn't going to be enough. So then I started looking around for other events. Then I realized that websites were really important and being able to contact people via, you know, sending them emails and all of that kind of stuff was really important too. So it was just kind of lots of little, oh, I better do that. Oh, I better do that. Oh, I better do that too. Bit by bit, layering it up.
Did you take any courses in business or watch anybody in particular or read any books that were particularly helpful at that point?
Oh, good question. Well, I had a whole stack of career change books, which made me very quickly think this is not right. You know, should I totally retrain in a different field? You know, should I do all of this? I went to see a career coach and I told her some of my ideas. And she said, I think you'd be great doing an extra degree in, I was thinking about doing a degree in psychotherapy. She said, I think you'd love the learning of it. And by the time you got to the end of 3 years, you'd be bored of it and you wouldn't want to actually do the work. And I was like, yeah, fair play.
That's so interesting because when I lived in America, I went to NYU and applied to study psychology with the goal of changing to become a psychologist.
Yeah.
And they actually let me in because I passed all their exams, even though I had no qualifications. And I studied for about a year and loved the studying and realized exactly what you said. Yeah. At some point I realized I love all this, but at some point someone's going to come in my office and start moaning about their problems. Sorry, everybody. I don't mean that in an awful way, but that's what I would feel like. And they will weight me down and I won't be able to stand it. So anyway, it's just interesting. We both could have been really bad psychotherapists.
And the thing is, she's totally right. Because when I actually imagined, so what would my day-to-day life be like if I did that? I was like, oh, okay, no, I don't want to just be sitting static in an office or no, that's not right. And then what was really good, there's a guy called John Williams and he's got a second book out now, but the first book that I read was called Screw Work, Just Play. And it was part of my career change books and I really loved it. I loved the title and I loved his attitude. And he was running an online program called the 30-Day Challenge. And it was all about taking an idea that you love, testing it out, trying it. And because art wasn't viable in my head at all at this point, I thought, well, it can't be art related, can it? So the next thing was interior design related. So I ran this group with people in their homes and we went round to everybody's homes and we did all these exercises about finding what you loved and the bit about your home that was most niggling you to change and you got everybody else's views to help you. It was really, really good fun, but totally not a business at all. But the bravery of reaching out to people, and it was friends, getting this idea off the ground. I started my first blog at that point. So somebody led me through the, okay, what is a blog? How do I start it kind of thing? Where do I even go? Because you don't know what even questions to ask. So that I think was the Kickstarter. And then after that, I had a coaching call with somebody and I said, it's not quite right. And she said, well, what do you really want to do? And I said, well, I really want to paint and make that work. And she said, well, do that then.
As easy as that.
That was it. And that was it. Yeah. It was like, right, let's see where this can go then if we really do it. So, and then the membership came about as a, it was a fluke really. We had a group of people doing something And I had realized at that point, so like you say, this was 2018. So I'd done a number of years of showing once a year at Open Studios. I started my current website then, mailing lists, done some art fairs, that kind of thing. And all of, at every single stage of this, I'd had to work it all out myself. There was nowhere to go. There was nobody to ask. I found the artist community where we were was friendly, but not very aspirational, would possibly be fair to say. Yeah. And the artists who were successful were quite secretive. They didn't share what they did. Like, there was nobody to talk to about this stuff. So when I had a group of artists in for something, and I said, look, I've got this idea, and this is my vision for it. This is what I want it to look like, but it's going to take me a long time to build it. Are you in? Because I need your commitment to be in. And then I'm prepared to do all the work to put it all together, because it's all in my head, but it's going to take a bit of time to flow out. And that's how Connected Artists was born. And most of those founding members are still with us.
Well, reverse forward, not fast forward, because I remember before you started it, emailing you. I was in that initial small group, and I emailed you because I was feeling just like you've just described. There's no one to help me. I have no idea who to ask. Same situation with the local art community. Who is there I can get advice? And now there's several places, but then there really wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I sent you a message on Facebook. You won't remember this. And I said, you really should teach. Like, you'd be amazing. And at the time you said, oh, I could, you know, I don't think I could teach. And I think I was talking about painting. And you said, I don't think I could do that. But then a month or two later, or even weeks later, you wrote to me and said, stay tuned for something coming. And I remember thinking, oh, good, Alice is going to put something together. So there'll be somewhere for me to go, somewhere for me to get information. But what was it that made you decide you're not going to teach painting?
Yeah.
You're going to teach this other side of things.
Probably two things, I think. Three things. One is that there were lots of places to learn painting. So there are lots of fantastic artists online and offline, and I quite like in person, where you can go and paint and be surrounded by people creatively and learn how to do it. So that was the first thing. The second thing was I didn't feel confident and equipped to teach painting, because I was still figuring that out very personally. And possibly there's an element of that I didn't want to share. It's a bit like talking about personal stories when you're in the middle of it. You know, you don't kind of go on Instagram and do an Instagram live about a particularly bad day you're having while you're in the middle of it and having a row with you. I mean, you might talk about it afterwards when you're in it. So I just didn't feel that I had my painting process sorted in a way to teach painting. And in a way, I still don't, because it's always changing. But what I really found about what we do in Connected Artists was there were lots of courses available online, but all of them were very specific and quite deep. So you could go away and you could do a whole course about, like, it wasn't going really deep with Pinterest then, but go really deep about, you know, very heavy email funneling and marketing. Or you could, I didn't want to take eight different courses from three different people or eight different people about all the different elements of the things that I felt I needed to know. And lots of those felt like they were directed and they were aimed at people in very different markets with very different approaches to putting all of this stuff together and selling. And I think as artists, we have to wear a lot of hats. We've spoken about this before. You've got to know yourself. You've got to understand your process. You've got to learn about all of this. How do you get out there stuff? And do it all in a way that feels right. So, you know, I don't profess to be a web expert. I'm not a technical expert, but I have done enough things to understand what I can take and leave and what I think works for you. Because if you don't feel it, if you don't feel, yeah, okay, I get that. I see why I do it. Great. I'm going to go off and have a crack at that. you'll never do it. And if you never do it, then it will never start working for you. So I don't think you need the complex level of depth to all of those different elements, but you do need to have the foundations in place. So that's how it's built. It's been this kind of, right, get the foundations in place. And what I found is that most artists tend to be really good in one area. So they're either really good, really accomplished, great with their studio practice, fantastic with their work, but they're really not very good or confident about showing up and talking to people about it. Or yeah. Some are really good at showing up, at talking about it, but maybe they want a little bit of a nudge, or they want a place to talk about some of the ideas behind it, or progress the just the thoughts and the critique element behind their work. So I wanted to have a place where we did all of it, which means it's turned into a bit of a monster. It's quite big in there now.
Well, it's big, but it's manageable feeling. So for everybody listening, I am a member of Alice's Connected Artist Club and have been since the very beginning, because like I say, as soon as she said, I was like, yep, count me in, because I just want someone to show me the path, because I'm completely lost. And so I was there right at the start, and there was nothing, as you said, apart from a community, which is not nothing. You know, I had been to in-person art clubs around me looking to see, is there somewhere I could go and talk to other artists? But it was just a different level of interest in art as a career, or as a, it was more retired people who were doing it as a hobby, and it was a social event. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's not what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. This, what you built even from the beginning, was a community, at the time a small community, of people who were serious. Mm. I would say the people who are drawn to your membership are all different levels of their career, but the one thing they have in common is they're committed to it. They're serious about it. Yeah. It's not I might give this a go and see how it goes. It's like, no, I really want to do this. And what's wonderful to have watched, and what I want to ask you about, is how you went from nothing to full thing. Because a lot of people would imagine, I want to teach this, I have to build out a whole course. Mm-hmm. And when I've got a whole course, I'll invite people in for 12 weeks or whatever, and they'll... What gave you the idea of building this membership model, which allows people to move at their own speed and also allows you to create the content at the speed you could manage?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, like I said, I did have this crazy spreadsheet which had all sorts of things, like your audience, working events, what you need to do behind the scenes, all the systems that I'd set up for myself, how to keep records of work, all of that. And I looked at it and I thought, well, there's no way I could do that in a 10-week or a 12-week course. And quite frankly, it's more than a feeling, it's a belief, is that, you know, being an artist is a long-term thing. You don't show up and get it done in 10 weeks or 12 weeks. It's something that you're doing and you're learning and you're tweaking and you're adjusting forever. And you can get things right for now, and then you can go back and improve them always. Like, it's the same with paintings. It's the same with the business approach elements too. So it always made more sense to me for it to be a membership. Because the other thing is this idea about allowing for variation and people moving in and out of various phases. Like, I knew this from my experience that if I had a year and I had three events that I was planning for, you know, at some stages I'm deep in a studio phase, and at other stages I'm in, right, now I've got to think about how I'm going to talk about this work and get ready for the event, and what do I need to know about this and framing and that. That might not necessarily be the same time scale as you or the other person. So trying to force everybody into doing things at particular times just didn't even make any sense to me. So that's why it's always been a membership, so that it's there when you need it. But it's changed since the beginning. But what we started off with was what I felt was the most important thing, which was getting hold of your week and your life in your planner system, which sounds like a really complicated thing. It's not. It's my notebook that I still use.
Yeah, I've still got one. I haven't got it. Oh, hang on.
And it's funny, I go back, I looked the other day. Yeah, there you go. I looked back at some of those earlier videos and I think I could re-record these, you know, because maybe the quality of the video recording or the editing is a bit, ugh, but they work, like they still work. And also I think it's quite nice for people to see, look, this is how it started. This is how it began. Yeah. Here it is. So some of them I've just written underneath. This was my first ever video and I'm not re-recording it. This is a really, so the, this weekly plan, that was the first thing that I ever did.
So for people listening who are saying, yeah, but I still don't get what's a membership.
Right.
Explain what a membership is, because I still find people are confused between the two.
Yeah.
And what a new member finds when they get in there. What is it that you've built?
Okay, so it's two. I think it's two elements, really. So you've mentioned the community element, and we have a Facebook group. And I know some people don't like Facebook, but believe me, I have looked at alternatives. And the reality with alternatives is that people think they're great initially, but they don't come back. And the Facebook has a lot of functionality within a group. All your it's private. All your friends don't see what you're posting in there. It's only people within the group. It has a huge amount of functionality in there. And it means that it's a really active and engaged conversation. So just this morning, I was answering a question for somebody who said, I fix labels to the back of my canvas and now they're visible from the front. What do I do about it? Like, you can have a question like that, and it's not just me answering, because we've got quite a lot of other experienced artists in there as well. Everybody else can answer. So that's one part of it that's really important. And quite honestly, I think some people only do that.
Mostly me, although I do dip into the other stuff, but the group is amazing.
But the other part is the membership hub. So that is a bit like a website with a lot of content, but it's all organized in different sections. So it's all there for, it has a search facility, but it's all divided into different sections so that you can go in. So if you're thinking, right, I need to start a newsletter, what do I need to think about? Or what should I put in my newsletter? Or I need help with my social media planning? Or what should I be putting if I'm doing in a blog post? What's the point of writing blog posts? All of that kind of stuff is in there. And that is what has taken 2 years, 3 years now to grow. And then we have new stuff each month. So all of that is like a massive library. And I still love Tracy's quote from when she first joined. She said, oh my God, I've just got inside and I feel like I've enrolled in the University of How to Be an Artist. That's my favorite ever little bit of feedback.
Yeah, that's great.
And then, but the membership element means that it's live. There's new stuff each month. So we have more guests coming in. So now we have a focus call each month. We have a work review call live with members each month where they can submit work and then we discuss it. So that's more the studio learning part of it. We have a total open Q&A, ask me anything. And we also have recently started, and I wasn't sure about this, but it's working quite well, an action hour where you commit to getting things done and we do it together. So it's not just, here's all the stuff, now go away and watch it and do it. There's a place where you can be sure that you're getting stuff done. And the most important part when you come in, when you're new, is that we have what we call the artist path. So you go through this series and it identifies where you are and what you should be concentrating on at the moment. So a lot of it, you can think, fine, I can leave that till later. This is what I should be focusing on now. And you can print it off, highlight what's next, work out what you're concentrating on, what's your aim for the next month, off you go and do that. So that's kind of how it works. Does that explain it?
It does, it's perfect. And I love that artist path that you created because it really does focus you. But the other side of it is, as I put my hand up, to say I'm someone who hasn't worked through all aspects of it, but it's also a fantastic resource for dipping in. So what happened was when I had to, because of lockdown, I couldn't get a photographer to photograph my sketchbooks and I needed that for the book I'm creating. So I needed to buy a DSLR camera and then I needed to learn how to use it. I was like, ah, and you have a whole section on that, on photographing artwork. So it's a good place to dip in and out of as well. You can follow the structured path, or you can literally go, I want to know today, I want to start working on Pinterest. I'm going to see if there's anything in there. And usually there is something in there about whatever it is that you're facing now, because you've built it up over time. But it's just fascinating to see, I don't know, that someone, and I don't mean this sounds like an insult, without a business background, has built such an amazing resource on how to run an art business. And as you say, it's because it's built, I suppose it's because it's built through trial and error of your own mistakes, that it's so valuable, that it's so on point. And I'm not being paid for this, everybody. I just genuinely think this. Alice is not slipping me a backhander after this.
Well, I think it's interesting, and it's important to say that it's not the way. Like, there are lots of different ways to build and run an artist business, but this is totally me sharing what's worked for me and why. So we do have discussions around galleries, and you know, we have a member, John Button, and he sent, you know, the majority of his work has sold through galleries historically, but he's also now branching out into selling directly. And he wanted to do that, but I mean, there are limits with the gallery system. And I know that for some people, there are very good reasons why that could be part of your approach, but it's how you fit it all in. And it's asking all these questions, like, how do you negotiate with a gallery? What's going to be the right terms and conditions for you? But the way that I do it is it's giving a space for those kind of conversations to happen. It's not a blueprint. It's not a, you must do this. And there are things that I could do better. Like, I could have better email funnel systems. Like, does the idea of an email funnel system light me up to get out of bed in the morning? No. You know, have I done fine without it? Yeah. So it's not the top of my priority list. You know, there are always things that I can be doing and improving and changing, and I feel like I'm always playing catch up with it a little bit. But it's very much a, yeah, this is what's worked. And also now what we're really getting as we've grown a little bit is the sharing from the other members is extraordinary. Yeah. So when people do an event and they come back and they say, this is what really worked, this is what didn't work, that's the bit that's really priced us, because it's not just me anymore. It's everybody else's experience too.
Now, I have a question for you. How do you balance? You still have your full-time artwork.
Yeah.
But you are in that group a lot. You answer everyone's questions. I've messaged you and you've answered me. I'm sure you do that with everybody.
No, I don't answer messages. Don't message me. Don't message me.
But how do you balance? How do you keep that from overwhelming you?
Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I'm not very good. That's kind of my thing this year, is to have a little bit more boundaries in place. But you know, it's, if somebody's got a question and I can answer it easily, or it's already in the hub, you know, it's easy, it's quick to answer. And I know what it feels like to be frustrated. So I don't mind doing that. And I am starting to get some more help with that now. I suppose it's just that it's important. Like, if I feel like I'm asking the members to be committed to something, and therefore I need to be equally committed. It's like when you make a painting and you're asking somebody to buy it, you're asking somebody to part with their hard-earned money for it. You've got to treat that painting in the same way if you're expecting somebody else to show up for it in a way that's as important. And the membership for me is like the same. It's like people say, why don't you divide it and do separate bits? It's like, because I'm kind of all in on the membership, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you've only got, so I think you dilute things, don't you? You've only got so much energy.
Yeah.
And the way that you run the membership with the amount of time you put into it, if you were to do any more, like mini courses and other things, when would you actually paint?
Yeah.
And someone said to me once, oh, it's the talking about art that makes money, not the painting. And I said, yeah, but the painting is so, you can't run an art membership teaching people how to be an artist if they notice that you haven't painted or sold anything in a year. Yeah. Like, who are you to be telling me all this stuff? So yeah. The things go completely hand in hand, I think. And the balance is what I've observed you struggling with. The struggle is because I can see for myself how much you desire to give everybody and how much you desire to answer every single person's question. And the relief now must be a little bit that you've got the help. And also, as you said, you've got members who are so experienced that they can answer those questions.
Yeah. And I think also it's just that, you know, originally all we had each week was a Q&A session. You know, that was it. There was nothing else beyond that. And it was just, okay, what questions come up? And it's making sure that those are covered in a content that people can go back and refer to. And so now so much of that is covered within the content within the hub. And that's really good because it means that the questions that we have the time to discuss are the ones that are more nuanced, that have more interest, that have more, you know, variation. So that's another element of that, really, is that it's just taken that amount of time to answer all of those things in a place that's easy for people to find what they need. But yeah, I mean, it's a struggle. And if I didn't feel strongly about it, then, you know, I would just go back to painting. But I think it's not just me that thinks it is an important resource. And I love it just as much as I love painting. So
I was going to ask you, what do you get out of it? What does it do for you? We've talked about what it does for other people, but what does it do for you?
It makes me feel part of something which is important. Now I'm going to do that crying thing. Because I think art and artists deserve a place in the world and to be seen. And I think too many artists talk themselves down. They don't expect a lot from themselves or their work. And when you see your art going out into the world and people really enjoying it, when you see how much people grow when they do something, when I know what it turned around for me when I started doing all of this.
Yeah.
I think that's what it does for me, really. It's that encouragement. It's that encouragement, and it's people finding their own place and their own way of doing something. And if we go back to the idea that you and I, you know, interested in the psychology behind it, that's what it is. It's so closely tied up to art and life and figuring things out. And like, you can't make a division between this stuff. It's all wrapped up together, and it's just endlessly fascinating. That's what I'm not bored of it. You know, yeah. I'm this far in, this much time in, and it still never bores me. So that's what I get out of it.
And now that you've been doing it for 3 years or however long it is, 4 years, really, with the initial group, you've seen so many success stories. Like, I've seen them because I've been there all along, so I know how many there are. But was there a point when you first started it and you're sharing what works for you that you wondered if it would work for other people, that you thought, what if people pay me for this and then they do it and then it doesn't work? Or were you always confident?
I don't think anybody is always that confident, and I think, you know, there are ups and downs that artists have. I think what I've learned from what I've seen is that and I'm thinking of somebody this week who's done an incredible project. I'm going to be sharing some of the stories, I think. I haven't quite worked out how yet. But somebody this week has shared the result of a project that she's been doing, and it's not in a way that I would do it necessarily. And yet she's had the most fantastic results from it. And that is lovely to see, because it does still help you follow. It's this old thing, isn't it? If the energy is there, if the belief is there, then it's more likely to work for you. So I think since I've started, when I first started, I thought, I've got to have the answers to everything for everyone. And now I realize that not only do I not need to have, but that is also not the best way of doing it. So I feel a little bit less of that pressure. But you know, and not everybody is there because they want to make it a full-time career or, you know, pay all their bills. People are in there, like you say, just because it's a space where it's considered and people who are more serious about it. And we have discussions that challenge things a little bit. So it's not all, you know, money and selling by any means.
What do you see for it going forward? I mean, you've said you're not bored with it, so you're going to keep going. What do you see coming next?
This year, we're working more on having some other guests in. So that is a little bit going deeper. So I'm talking to somebody today, and she's going to be coming in and talking to us about storytelling and copywriting, because we've seen that that's a really important part. And yet, if I say you've got to be a copywriter too, everyone goes, ah, horrible, don't want to have to do that. But it doesn't have to be like that. So I think bringing more people in is helpful. I think some of it going forward will be reviewing and improving. I think there's a lot of fine-tuning, and again, that it happens with a painting too. It's not that you necessarily have a radical change, and it's not that I want to be piling on more stuff. That's what's got to be the change going forward. I feel like we've kind of got to the stage where a lot of the content is covered. But coming up, for example, we're going to be talking more about commissions. We're going to be talking about working out a kind of ladder structure for everything that you have available. There's always things that you can go back and review and improve. So that's what we've got coming up. And it's just more building in this sense of your personal goals and checking where you are with that. So I think that's the direction this will go for, more this kind of continuity element.
Yeah
I don't know, we'll see. I don't know, if you asked me that a year ago, I don't know what I would have said now, so I don't know for next year either.
So I'm just thinking that as this was Alice's story, but we spent a lot of time talking about the membership site because that's been such a big part of what you've done in the last few years. So I'm thinking there might be some people saying, oh, this sounds interesting, how do I find out more? You've been quite judicious about letting people in. It's not always open. So the question is it open? And if people want to find out more, where do they go?
Yeah, we opened last in November, twice a year at the moment we opened, because it means that people can come in at once. I know that you feel unsettled and you've got to help finding your way around, and I can concentrate on that. So the best place is to come to my website, alicesheridan.com, and there will be a place there where you can, well, I would normally say sign up to join the wait list, but what I want to do this time is I'm going to have a few things in advance that help you. I've got a couple of tools I'm going to give you away for free, and some questions to ask yourself about the sort of three areas, I suppose, that we cover. So we're going to be doing that sort of in the week coming up. But yeah, we're recording this at the middle of May, and that will be coming up. So come over to my website, add your name to that mailing list. That's not my art mailing list. It's a separate thing. There will be a big banner on the website by the time this goes out. And then keep an eye out over the next week or so. And you can, hopefully there will be enough out there so that you can work out if it's the right thing for you or not, because it's not for everybody. But yeah, that's what we've got coming up.
And that's actually a question. If anybody's thinking about joining in this challenge, will it just be for painters, or is it for anybody, any art?
No, it's not just painters. So we have a couple of photographers and ceramicists and people who work in textiles. I would say the majority of the people in there are painters, but because a lot of the things that we do and the topics that we cover could apply to any type of art. So it doesn't have to be. I mean, later we've got a work review call today, and we're actually looking at work that is non-painting related, because it's not, I'm teaching you how to paint, you don't have to be a painter. And the variety of painters and painting styles that we have in there is quite broad as well. So yeah, that's partly what makes it fun.
Okay, so if Alice is giving stuff away for free, go everybody and get your name on that list because you can't miss out on that.
Yeah, it's a funny little kind of geeky tool that I developed, which is helpful, I think, in terms of you understanding where you're going in your work. So yeah, that's what we've got coming up.
I want to have a go at this. I don't know if I know what this is. So for our final segment, as always, we look at what's inspired. And I am completely without anything to say today. I just can't think of anything.
Usually it's the other way around.
I know, it's not been a bad week. It's been a good week, but I can't think of anything. So it's all on you, Alice.
Okay, well, mine is more a little tip. I have been having big problems in my studio, and I don't know, like the lighting hasn't changed, but I've been having big problems whenever I try and record anything on video, I get the flicker. So I have been trying to work out what the solution is, and the lights are up really high. I don't really want to change all the light fittings. I can't find an electrician with a long enough ladder to do it. That's going to cost me a lot of money. So having done my research, so when you have a new iPhone and you record video, you can record video at 60 frames a second or 30 frames a second. But there's something to do with the way that the electrical charge, how many times it goes through your electricity supply in your country. And so even though you can't see the lights flickering, when you record, if it match it or if it doesn't match your frame rate, you get the flicker on video. So I'm like, well, this is well and good. Right. But my iPhone just has 30 or 60 choice. What do I do? So having been thinking I'm going to have to spend hundreds of pounds on an electrician, I found a solution which cost me $14.99.
What is the solution? Please do share, because I have a flicker problem.
The solution is an app on the App Store called Filmic Pro. And in Filmic Pro, you can set your frame rate to match your electrical current so you don't get your flicker.
Amazing.
And set the white balance settings and do everything. And I read the reviews for it and people said, this is great, but it's making my phone so hot that it feels like it's going to blow up. And then I saw the date of the review was quite a number of years ago now. And so I installed it and I thought, well, you know, what have I got to lose? $15, £15, whatever it was. It's cheaper than getting the electrician in. It's cheaper even than buying new light bulbs, even if it was that. But it's not that. That's the point. It's the whole thing about flickering LED lights. And it works.
That is such a great tip. I love that.
So I'm really, I've only done it for the last 2 days. So what I haven't quite worked out is how you get everything out of there. But it's really good. It's got choices about like how far. So when you do, time-lapse videos, you can choose how often you want the time-lapse to take, for example. So there's a lot more in it than you have on your normal phone camera settings. So Filmic Pro is the one that I went for.
That is well worth $14.99 as well, because it's a real problem. I have certain lights that flicker and I have to turn those off when I'm filming, but then it's not quite bright enough.
Yep. Yeah,
I shall be purchasing that. Thank you.
Good. Okay, so that's it from us this week. Thank you for all those questions. I enjoyed that, actually. We didn't talk that much about the direction that the art is going in now, but maybe we'll come back to that another time.
Yeah, we got a bit embroiled in the membership. But we could do another episode where we talk to each other about our work.
Well, the work is always changing and we touch on it a bit each week. And actually, the best place to follow what's going on in the work is both our Instagram accounts, isn't it? So I'm Alice Sheridan Studio on Instagram and Louise is Louise Fletcher _art. That's probably the best place to see what's going on in the studio. But if you want to find out more about Connected, as I say, come to my website, alicesheridan.com. And if you're listening to this as it's going out, there will be something on the homepage now. But otherwise, you can always find out more if you go to the For Artists tab. And who knows, maybe there'll be other things there by then too. But at the moment, this is my baby, and this is what you're going to find. So I look forward to talking to you about it if you're at all interested. And next week, actually for the next 2 weeks, we've got some quite in-depth discussions with, we've got you, and then we've got another guest coming on as well. So a lot of what we're talking about, artist life sharing. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
But it's been a funny week because my eyes are a bit odd. I am weaning myself off my magic overnight contact lenses.
I didn't know you used magic overnight contact lenses.
I do. For the last 15 years, I've had contact lenses that I put in at night. And then when I wake up in the morning, my distance vision is corrected. They are heaven.
Didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, it's so good. But because I've been needing reading glasses more recently, I'm finding that I'm more putting my glasses on and off. So we're going to be trying varifocals, which means I've got to let my eyes reset to normal crapness.
Yeah.
which takes about a week. So they are currently half crap. So having eyes which can half see is an interesting position to be in for an artist. Thank you.